You're listening to New England Public Radio. History or science questions? How much sugar goes in a recipe? What's the latest on election recounts? Nothing remains a mystery for too long in the digital age. But it's those rare mysteries of life that inspire an Amherst College philosophy professor. He attempts to read minds, demonstrating a mix of seemingly impossible feats. New England Public Radio's Jill Kaufman reports.
In a hip Northampton cafe, a show is about to begin. A dozen or so people are sitting around tables in a small room filled with art.
My name is Alexander, and I am a professor of philosophy at Amherst. And in that capacity, I'm actually doubly interested in strange features of the mind. First of all,
on this night, reading the mind. And whether Alexander George is teaching philosophy to 20-somethings or demonstrating a unique set of skills where he appears to know what card, number, word is on your mind, there are connections between the two, he says.
It's fair to say that the mind is to philosophers what honey is to bears. They're positively intoxicated by its sweet mysteries. But also,
and George is clearly intoxicated by the idea that he is creating uncertainty in a time, as he says, when we're all way too confident about what we know.
So whichever hat I wear...
Like a good professor, George gives mind reading some context with references to psychological studies and literature. And he mentions, in particular, a story he read when he was young. It gripped him and is the inspiration for what's ahead this evening. Funes the Memorious by Jorge Luis Borges is about a young man who falls off a horse and is paralyzed. But he gains the capacity to remember everything.
Not general abstract things, but every possible particular he can't expunge from his memory. And it's worth so much to him that in a way he doesn't really care about the fact that he is paralyzed.
After admitting this appetite for mind over body, George then explains what is about to happen is nothing new.
Every gambler knows about the fact that ideas lead to stimulation of the muscles. They're called tells.
Thoughts energize facial muscles, fingers, even the larynx.
So, of course, I need a helper.
A volunteer named Shruti Kanthan goes up to the front of the room, and in his first demonstration, George explains how he can predict what people might say and how he influences their answers. He holds a deck of cards shuffled by another audience member. Kanthan takes a card, looks at it. George tells her to burn the image into her mind.
So I'm just going to run through some possibilities, and it's very simple. We're going to stare at your face.
Great.
George starts to list what the card could be, starting with color, red or black, and he repeats red or black several times. Watching Kanthan closely, he guesses red correctly. It goes from there.
All right, so if it was a red card, it's either a diamond or a heart. Okay, so your card was a diamond or a heart or a diamond. I'm with you.
He says diamond. He's correct. George then goes on to the value of the card.
No, there was absolutely nothing there. Ace, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 4, 5. Your card was a 5 of diamonds? Give her a hand.
George's demonstrations become more complex, at least mathematically. The most complicated one is called Knight's Tor, an algorithm solved in front of the crowd while he simultaneously recites digits of pi memorized from a book. He's at the mercy of audience members who pass the book around.
Page number 32.
32. Okay. Does that start with... an 8?
Yes.
And then and a 9?
At least on this night, George never gets a thing wrong. Even with his explanations, it's uncanny. Now, I'm not trying to be a spoilsport. But I asked George flat out, what's going on here?
I don't pretend to be able to read minds. I'm certainly using my powers of observation and whatever kinds of powers of verbal persuasion to pick up on things and also to manipulate people.
There's more that he admits he won't say, but he says it's the least interesting part of the story. What's more interesting to him is the audience.
They're not quite sure of what they just saw.
And that's a big difference between mentalism, as mind reading is also called, and a magic show.
You don't know how the person did what they did, but you know they couldn't have done what they did.
Like cut a body in half or make a coin disappear and then pull it out of someone's ear. Study after study, not to mention YouTube, can tease apart some of the mystery here. There's that body language, and a mentalist can prime the audience with words and images, and George says he does all this. Still, I'm a reporter. I want to know more. I mean, this is not like you're sitting here going, oh, Jill Kaufman, she's coming through.
You had chicken recently, didn't you?
Maybe on a pizza last night, but I don't know.
I'll count that as a hit.
For New England Public Radio, I'm Jill Kaufman, but you knew that.